This week, as I was looking and studying, trying to find some topics or something that I don't think I spoke on. I don't know. Maybe I have in another way. But for some reason, it got on the mind authority. You know, I think we find there's levels of authority all throughout life, even in our household. I mean, even with your children, when you give them a chore, you're giving them authority to do certain things. That's what you're doing. And so that was on my mind. And this week as I was looking through God's Word, I started to look up that word, authority, to see where it appears. And it appears in both the New and Old Testament, but the word that's used is, the meaning seems a little different, but one that fell on my mind, I'm going to use this for our text, for our thoughts this morning. Comes from Proverbs, the 29th Proverb, the 2nd verse. I'm going to read that to you because we're going to go look at other places. Dealing with authority. It says, when the righteous are in authority, the people rejoice. But when the wicked beareth rule, the people mourn. And I think that points to this country as much as any proverbs we could ever look at today. Authority in this country is, we're doing everything, it seems like we're doing everything that we can as a government to tear down any semblance of authority and just go about doing whatever you want to, whoever you are, do whatever you want to. But this says when righteous are in authority. So if I had a title for this morning's sermon, it would be that, righteous authority. Because we can find authority in a lot of different ways, and it's nothing righteous about it. So we look for those things in it, and that would make us to rejoice. Now, the Bible has a lot to do with, has a lot to say about men and women who were placed in positions of authority. And if we learn lessons from them, and I'm going to look at one in particular this morning, just a little bit. And it's somebody that we already know, so I won't have to go into detail. It's a man named Joseph. And Joseph is, as I've been brought up and I understand it and look at the Bible, Joseph is one of those special people that God opened up their lives to us, that we could look into their lives. He seemed like a very good man. He was caught in all sorts of trouble. I mean, and it was a trouble of his own making, but he went through a lot of hard times. And yet, each and every time as he went through it, his authority was never seemed like his authority was never in question. And I say that we know that he's one of 12 brothers that was brought up, and their father kind of sounded to me like the father kind of favored Joseph and got him that coat of many colors. And there ought to be a lesson there. We're not going to look at it this morning. Be careful that you set your children one higher than the other, because it might just give you some trouble. But as it went out, Joseph's brothers, they found an opportune time, and they sold him off to Ishmaelites, heading down to Egypt. And of course, he goes down there, and he's bought by one of the government officials there, a man named Potiphar, brings him into his household. In Genesis 39, you go there for a little bit. We're going to be in Genesis 39 here for a little bit. So you go ahead and turn over there. Keep up with it. Anyway, down here, and Potiphar has him, and he's brought him into his house. I'm going to hold right there while you find it. As I was thinking about how you present life issues, life problems, I kind of look at it in four ways. We identify a problem. Most of the time, we identify some problem. And it can be anything. And it seems like it's all. And then we look for somebody, something that can fix that. And I'm going to call that an authority. And then we look for there to apply some sort of a solution to that problem. This authority taken, and they apply some sort of a solution to it. And then the last step would be to go back and look and see what our little results were. You know, did it go the way they thought, or just where did we end up with this? And I always keep that in our minds this morning. A problem, an authority, a remedy to a solution, and then a result to look at, to go back and revisit what's been done. And think about that, because we're going to see that in the story that we have here for Joseph. And I don't want to spend a whole lot of time with Joseph because I want to get to the one that's got the most that needs to be pointed to. Joseph is oftentimes pictured as Christ. He's pictured in the things that happened in his life as a picture of the one to come who would be so much better. And that's Jesus. And so we're going to look in the life of Joseph, but then transfer over to Jesus to see this same sort of information pan out for us. In Genesis 39 verse, it says Joseph was brought down to Egypt. And Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh, captain of the guard, an Egyptian, brought him up the hands of the Ishmaelites and brought him down thither. He brought him into his house. And it says that the Lord was with Joseph. That's important. That in that 39th chapter alone, in all that Joseph goes through, four times, it reminds us that God was with him and he was in mercy. That will tell us something about how are we going to get out of this mess that we seem to be in this country. God's got to be with us. If he's not with us, we're not going to succeed. We're not going to see any success. Joseph has said that the Lord was with Joseph, and he was a prosperous man. And he was in the house of his master, the Egyptian. So it didn't take long enough in the house of Potiphar that God's with him, and he begins to prosper. The house begins to prosper. Potiphar sees it. He recognizes it. And this man that's come down, I thought, there's something going on here. This is special. And it says, and his master saw that the Lord was with him, and the Lord made all that he did to prosper in his hand. And Joseph found grace in his sight. He found grace in the sight of Potiphar. And he served him. And he made him an overseer of his house. And all that he had, he put into his hand. What's that say? Potiphar got to a place where he said, you know what? I've got a problem. I can't run my household. I'm the government with the Pharaoh. I don't have time to take care of my house. This man Joseph, I'm going to put it in his hands. He's an authority. I've got a problem. I'm going to put it in his hands. He's going to take it. I'm not going to worry about it. I'm not going to have that influence. I know what's going on, but I'm going to put it in his hands. And it says here, all that he had, he put into his hands, and it came to pass from the time that he had made him overseer in his house and over all that he had, that the Lord blessed the Egyptian's house for Joseph's sake. And the blessing of the Lord was upon all that he had in the house and in the field. Joseph, by all accounts from what we can see, was doing a wonderful job. And it goes on and says, and he left, this talks about Potiphar now, and he left all that he had in Joseph's hand. What's he saying there? He wasn't going to stick his nose into it and say, well, I can do this, I'll do this and that, you take care of this. No. He understood that whatever came good, whatever was going on, is because of what Joseph was doing. Joseph was applying some sort of a remedy. I don't know what it was that he was doing in that house, but whatever it was recognized. It was getting results. And when they looked down on the end of it, what he saw was that, yeah, he's doing a wonderful job. That's what he saw. And it said that he knew not all he had. In other words, Potiphar put it so much in Joseph's hand that, I don't know. Where do we see that? Listen, Katie handles the budget in the house. It's in her hands. I have no idea what she's doing. And I know someday she's in a fuss because somebody has done something somewhere and she's telling me about it. I got to call so-and-so to get something done. But you know what? I just put it in her hands and I just, okay, because it's working pretty good. That's what we see here. That's what we see going on in this household. And it says that he knew not all what he had, save the bread which he did eat. When he got home, is there a meal on the table? Nobody's fussing and fine. We're good. And he says that Joseph was a good person and well-favored. And, of course, we know that story unfolded because God had a role for Joseph, something that was going to be done here, that the wife of Potiphar accused him of something, which I believe she falsely accused him. He was thrown into prison. So now he's taken out of that place now, and it's basically what you're going to read about now when going down to in the 39th chapter, go down to the 20th verse. And Joseph's master took him and put him in the prison, a place where the king's prisoners were bound, and he was there in the prison. In other words, Potiphar got him put in prison. So Potiphar died of his life now in a real sense, and now he's got this prison keeper. That becomes Joseph's master on earth. And we're told there that it was a place where the king's prisoners were bound, and he was there in the prison, but the Lord was with Joseph. You see that again. That's two. The Lord was with Joseph and showed him mercy and gave him favor in the sight of the keeper of the prison. It had that before with Potiphar. And now the Lord was with him and he had the keeper of the prison. Notice Joseph. And what does it say? And the keeper of the prison committed to Joseph's hands all the prisoners that were in the prison, and whatsoever they did there, he was the doer of it. Let's just say it here. I don't know what that prison keeper had, but he had a problem. He had a problem that I guess he'd been looking for. I don't know how long he'd been looking. But in Joseph, he saw somebody, here's somebody with authority that can fix my problem. I'm going to put it in his hands, just like Potiphar did. I'm going to put this in his hands. He's the authority. I'm going to let him run with it, see what he can do to remedy this problem, and then we'll look at it as things progress. That's the exact same thing that's going on again. It's the same routine. And it goes on to keep in the prison look, not to anything that was under his hand, because the Lord was with him, and that which he did, the Lord made it to prosper. In other words, he put it all in his hand, just like Potiphar did. You take care of it. And we know that as Joseph was in that state, as he was doing those things, it was certainly keeping the keeper of the prison happy. In that time, it was noted that Joseph seemed to have this wonderful, wonderful characteristic that he was able to interpret dreams. And we know the story, two men came to him with two different dreams. There was a beggar and a butler. And for the beggar, it wasn't good news. But for the butler, he told him he would soon be put back in his place as a butler to the Pharaoh of Egypt. He would be soon put back in it. And all Joseph asked was this: when you get back over there, you tell him about me. And the guy, and surely the guy walked out the door saying, yeah, I'll do that. I'm going out today, heading back over there. But we know that it was 2 years later, Joseph's still in that prison. And he's still being favored by God. And he's still doing that which is right. But now, the Pharaoh becomes involved because, lo and behold, the Pharaoh has a dream that nobody seems to be able to interpret. But when the butler got wind of it, got and understood that, he said, oh, yeah, that's right. There was a fellow back there that was good at these dreams. His name was Joseph. And they go and they bring him out of that prison now. Starts a new session. He's been with Potiphar. He's been with his prison keeper. Now he's in the house of Pharaoh. I would say, Kennedy, the power in Egypt in a natural sense. And in the 41st chapter of Genesis, over in about the 38th verse, the Pharaoh said unto his servants, can we find such a one as this, a man in whom the Spirit of God is? And why would he say that? Because Joseph took that dream of the Pharaoh about what, corn and cows, and you'd have seven fat ones, and they'd be followed by seven thin ones, and I guess at the end of 14 years, there would still be something, there'd still be life. And he read that to Pharaoh, and Pharaoh was impressed. And Joseph had correctly interpreted that dream. Now, why did Joseph do that? Because God was with him. God was moving him. God was, he was in the grace of God. He was in the mercy of God. And Pharaoh's now picked up on this, and he's asking, we've got this problem coming up. We're going to have 7 years of good and 7 years of bad. What are we going to do about it? We got a problem. What do we need to do now? We need to establish some sort of authority to take care of this problem. It's the same pattern again. I'm going to get Joseph. That's what Pharaoh said. He thought that. He saw it. Maybe he's got a remedy for it. And of course, we read and we understand that Joseph had just that. God impressed upon him to take a little bit every year from those in those good years, and they would use it to get through those bad years. And at the end, I'm guessing 14 years, what was that? We made it. We made it through this time.
It was a success.
So we read that in that 41st chapter. It says that Pharaoh said unto Joseph, "For as much as God hath showed thee all this, there is none so discreet and wise as thou art. As smart as you was at interpreting my dream, you're the right choice. You're the one that we're going to put in authority. Thou shalt be over my house, and according unto thy word shall all my people be ruled." You see what he's saying? I'm putting you in authority. Just like Potiphar did. Just like that prison keeper did. Pharaoh says, "I'm putting you in charge." And he goes on and says, "Only in the throne will I be greater than thou." Kind of like, sounds to me like, in name only. I'm the top banana in name only. You're going to be the one that's getting everything done. And he says, "And Pharaoh said unto Joseph, See, I have set thee over all the land of Egypt." And he would go on in that 41st verse, Pharaoh would say to Joseph, "I am Pharaoh." And at that time, Pharaoh was perhaps the greatest single individual man on earth at that time. Was this man named Pharaoh. He had control of so much, and great armies, and so much vast lands and riches. And it says, "I am Pharaoh, and without thee shall no man lift up his hand or foot in all the land of Egypt. We put it in your hands, Joseph. We'll see what the results are. You fix it." In the 55th verse there it says, "And when all the land of Egypt was famished, the people cried to the Pharaoh for bread. And the Pharaoh said unto all the Egyptians, Go unto Joseph. What he saith to you, do." That caused me to think of another place. Tie this to Jesus now a little bit. When you go to the book of John, the second chapter of the book of John, the first 11 verses deal with the very first miracle that's recorded by our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ. I don't know what it was. It was a marriage feast at Cana. And I kind of look at marriage as setting the stage for it. They go into this marriage feast at Cana, and what's their problem? They run out of wine. That's the problem. They don't have wine. Mary knows who to talk, knows who the authority should be. And she says something along the line. She says to those people that are trying to get this wine out to the people, and she says, "Whatever he says, do it." She's talking about Jesus. She's talking about Jesus. But she says, "There's your authority. We got a problem. We don't have wine. We got an authority. Somebody that can fix it." And of course, Jesus did it. And it was a miracle. That's what the Bible tells me, and I'm going to go with that. There was no scientific understanding that he was just at the right time, and it's just my luck, just turned into the wine. That's not what happened. It was water until that servant brought that little whatever ladle into it and pulled it out. And when it came out of there, it was wine. And folks, that's a miracle. That's the work of a higher authority. That's the work of Jesus Christ. Was the results good? I think the wedding went off pretty good. Now, this story closes the story up of Joseph. What was the reason for all of this? Why did Joseph go through all of this trouble? And I'm sure, you know, the Lord was putting him, well, not tempting him, but the Lord was testing him all along the way. And the Lord was recording this. It was recorded for us to read about these things. And time and time again, there was a problem. He was picked at the authority. He went and he applied what his solution was, and the result was it was a great success. Those are all things pointing to Jesus. Those are all pointing to what Jesus would do when he came. And we started to see that when he was at that marriage feast at Cana. But what was what came of that? God made a promise to Joseph's granddaddy, I guess, Abraham. And in Abraham, God made a promise, "I'm going to make you a great people. I'm going to make you a great people." Well, by the time we get to Joseph, he's one of 12 brothers. And my understanding is 70 or 75, the numbers, it's one of the two. 70 or 75 of them would eventually go down into Egypt. You know, after Joseph revealed himself to his brother, they brought Joseph down. They brought Jacob down. They brought Jacob down. His name was Israel. And God talked to Israel when he was going down in the 46th chapter. It says, "God spake unto Israel," that's Jacob.
He speaks to Israel in the visions of the night and said, Jacob, Jacob. And he said, here am I. And he said, I am God, the God of thy father. Fear not to go down into Egypt, for I will there make of thee a great nation. Sounds very similar to what God had told Abraham. And he's reminding, he's reminding Jacob of that same thing. I will go down with thee into Egypt, and I will also surely bring thee up again. You're going to go down into Egypt, but I'm going to bring you up again. And it says, and Joseph shall put his hands upon thine eyes. You're going to see your son. You've been all these years separated from this, from your son Joseph. You're going to go down into Egypt, and you're going to see him. But you're going to come back out of there again. And we know that they carried the body of Jacob back out and buried him when he died. What was going on? God made a promise that I'm going to have a great nation. And I'm telling you, 70 or 75 people is not a great nation. God put them right where they needed to be. And all of that ugliness that happened, and all of that betrayal, and all of the different times he had to go through those processes over and over again, it would have seemed ugly to most of us, but God tells us in that 50th chapter of the 20th verse, but as for you, you thought evil against me, but God meant it to good, to bring it to pass, as it is this day, to save much people alive. What's he telling him? I didn't go down there to present a nation of 70 or 75 people. I brought a nation of hundreds of thousands out of Egypt. That's what God's promise was. And so we saw all those things that people say, well, that's just bad luck. Joseph was just in the wrong place at the wrong time. He was exactly where God would have him to be to fulfill the promises that God had made, not only to him, but to his forefathers. So now we come to Jesus. I'm going to remind you again, a problem, an authority, and a solution to apply, and then a review. Keep that in your mind as we look again. Now we look at Jesus. And it tells us in Matthew 7:29, early on we see that it says, for he taught them, Jesus taught them as one having authority. Having authority and not as the scribes. It describes Jesus. Jesus has got this authority. There's something you need to pay attention for. He's got a plan. And folks, his plan he didn't think of it on that day. His plan had been before any one of us ever sinned, before we were ever a part of this earth. God already had a plan. And somewhere before time began, God Almighty, and there was only three, God the Son, God the Father, and God the Holy Spirit. And they decided back then, there's going to be a problem when we do what we're going to do, because we're going to create a whole lot. We're going to create life and worlds to sustain it. We're going to create time, everything. We're going to make it. And our pinnacle creation, man, is going to fall. That's a problem. Man's going to fall. That's a problem. What are we going to do to fix it? We need somebody that has the authority to do just what needs to be done. That's going to be our son, Jesus Christ. How would he fix that? What would he apply to that? Strangest thing I've ever heard of in all my life. We're going to take that Jesus Christ, God, we're going to bring his flesh, God in the flesh, we're going to send him down there for him to die. That's the remedy. Did it work? Brothers and sisters, I declare to you on this day that it did, and it worked perfectly. So what's the result? Remember our text? Are we rejoicing? A righteous authority. He draws that out of us. Joy. And listen, folks, I can't tell you of any greater joy that I know of in my life than to know how bad a situation I'm in and put myself into. And I have nothing I can do to fix it. I was not the authority. It's going to take somebody a lot better than me to fix my problem. Jesus did that. He's authority, and he has the perfect solution. He is. Mark, the first chapter of Mark, the 27th verse says, and they were all amazed insomuch that they questioned among themselves, saying, what thing is this? Jesus was doing his miracles. That's what he did on this earth. And you've got to know that when he did a miracle, whether you was his child or not, you caught on that something's going on here. You know what? Those people in that wedding ceremony, I don't know that they were, how many of those were children of God, but I suspect all of them thought, whoa, something's really going on here, strange. They say they only have water, but we're drinking some of the best wine that's in the place. That's a miracle. And it says that, what new doctrine is this? For with authority commandeth he even the unclean spirits, and they do obey him. When Jesus Christ applies his methods of fixing things, they work, even against unclean spirits that really don't want to have anything to do with him. And yet even they obey him. That's an authority. That's a good authority. Jesus met a centurion. Was that dumb luck? No. He helped that centurion. We're going to read a moment about it. But he not only helped that centurion, he helped us. Because authority is on authority. And so Jesus meets this man. He was a centurion. He was a Roman soldier over 100 people. That was what he was. I think it was basically like a captain where it came from. And he's got these, and this man is used to giving orders. He's used to placing people in authority who understand that he himself is under authority. There's people that's over him that's telling him out what to do. He understood that much, and he had a servant that was really sick. So here's this centurion, understands about authority, understands that his servant is really sick. I got a problem. Who can I look to with the authority to do something about it? I'm going to Jesus. Now, he's not a Roman citizen. Jesus is a Jew. And yet this centurion said, that's not a part. I'm going to him. And it says that there came to him a centurion come to Jesus, beseeching him and saying, Lord, my servant lieth at home, sick of the palsy, grievously tormented. I've got somebody who's sick at home, bad sick. And Jesus saith unto him, I will come and heal him. Jesus' response to him was, I'm going to come. I'm going to apply a fix. I'm your authority. I'm coming. I'm going to fix this. I'll be there. The centurion answered and said, Lord, I'm not worthy that thou shouldest come under my roof, but speak the word only, and my servant shall be healed. What's he saying? I understand something about authority. If you have a fix, you can do it from anywhere. You can just, I just listen to you, you'll fix it. It says, for I'm a man under authority, having soldiers under me, and I say to this man, go and he goeth, and to another, come and he cometh, and to my servant, do this and he doeth it. Can you hear Mary again? Whatever he says, do it. That's what Mary said, right? Whatever he said, just do it. And this centurion says, I understand that. I understand that concept. I understand the authority that's out there telling me. And he goes on, he says, when Jesus heard it, when Jesus heard that response, he said he marveled and said to them, that Father, verily I say unto you, I have not found so great faith. No, not in Israel. Now, they questioned his authority. Who questioned his authority? In the main, when I read about Jesus, though, that questioned his authority was somebody that felt like they were in competition with him. They felt like they were right there at his level and they were trying to work against him. Matthew 21 tells us the 23rd of the priest, and said the chief priests and elders of the people came unto him, Jesus, as he was teaching, and said, by what authority? What authority dost thou do these things? And who gave this the authority? Who made you? Who looked at you and said that you're the one that's got the answers? Because they were trying to convince everybody, those chiefs, those scribes, and those elders, that they had the answers. And don't we still have that today? Probably one of the things that has torn Christianity apart in the world is a lot of people saying, I've got the answer. Listen to me, I'll tell you how to fix this, and we keep forgetting that there's only one authority, one righteous authority. You want it done right? Go to Jesus. Go to Jesus. Now, Joseph was given authority. Was Jesus given authority? The Bible tells us that he was. John, In the third chapter, the 35th verse, it says, the Father loved the Son and had given him all things into his hands. Remember what Potiphar did? He put everything in the hands of Joseph. Remember what that prison keeper, he put it all in Joseph's hand. The Pharaoh of Egypt put it in Joseph's hand. God the Father made a choice of a people. And understanding that those people were going to fall, that's a problem. Who's going to fix it? Jesus Christ, the Son of God, would be the one. What did God do? He put a people in Jesus' hands. They're yours. Fix the problem. Fix the problem. Jesus did that. Did he not? He did it at a cross at Calvary, where he came to earth and he gave his life for his people that God had given to him. In other places, it tells us again that the Father judgeth no man, but hath committed all judgment unto the Son. He's given him all things. You got it. Fix it. You do whatever you need to do. And then we come to Hebrews. What a wonderful book Hebrews is. And the first chapter and a half of Hebrews is basically, I call it the book of betters. They spend that first chapter and a half of Hebrews, when you read it, talking about how much better Jesus is than angels. And he specifically mentions Moses. Jesus is so much better. And that's true. But then we get about halfway through the second chapter there, and it talks about that same Jesus, who is better than Moses, who is better than the angels. And yet it begins in the seventh verse and says, thou madest him, speaking about Jesus, madest him a little lower than the angels. Well, listen, if I want somebody to fix the problem, where am I going to start? Am I going to start with something that's less than an angel? Or am I going to start with something that's greater than it? And we already been told that Jesus was better than angels, but now it says God made him a little lower than the angels. He wasn't going to have the power and the thing that we could think that an angel might carry. He was going to come as a man. They have all the choices of somebody to fix the problem. What's my choice? I can make it give me an angel, or I can give me something above an angel. I can give me God. And God said, well, what you're going to get is Jesus. You're going to see Jesus, God in the flesh. And it says, I made him a little lower than the angels. I crowned him with glory and honor, and just set him over the works of thine hands. Those that I give you, God, we just read that, where God gave him to Jesus. I'm going to put you in the works of your hands. Jesus, you're going to be the one that's going to get him out of this. Thou hast put all things in subjection under his feet, for in that he put all subjection under him, he left nothing that is not put under him. Jesus, you got it all. It's yours to go with it. You apply the solution that you know is right. God knew what that was. God the Father and God the Holy Spirit, they knew what that was. Jesus certainly knew. And Jesus implemented his solution, that he would come and he would suffer as a man in our place, to die on the cross, to redeem us, to fix the problem. To fix the problem. How do I know that? We know there was a problem. We know sin's a problem, is it not? Sin's a problem. Always, since Adam and Eve fell in the Garden of Eden, sin's a problem. We know that before sin became a problem, before it became a problem, God already had the authority that he was going to put in place and was going to fix it. It's going to be Jesus. And God the Father was going to give Jesus everything. All those people, you make sure you got them covered. And Jesus applied his life and his death on an old rugged cross to redeem a people that God had given to him. How do we know? It talks about in this same passage we just looked at that there's a, now we see not yet all things put under him. As I look out today, I don't see that it says Jesus is a, this is proof that he succeeded. But the Bible tells me of a day where Jesus is going to take all those people that God gave to him, all those people that he died for, and here in the 13th verse of Hebrews, the second chapter, one of the great verses in all his gospels, how do we know? What kind of success did he have? There's coming a day when Jesus, we're going to stand there. I don't know if we'll be standing. I suspect we're going to be on our knees, probably on our faces, just praising God. There's going to be a day when God's people are there And Jesus is going to be standing beside of us. And all those that God has given to him, it's time to take him back home. And he's going to say, behold, I and the children which God hath given me. You want to know what my success story is? Here they are. God, you put me in charge. You gave me the authority to do what needed to be done. I've done it. Here they are. Folks, that's a great blessing. That's a wonderful thing. What did it take? Took the right authority, did it not? Listen, folks. This world, in my understanding, and I kind of got my doubts at times, they're telling us we're getting smarter and smarter. The more we go along, we're learning more and more and more and more. We have a thought we can fix your problems, whatever they may be. You believe that? People are still dying. Houses are still burning. Man's still being ugly to man. We need some better authority than what this world can give us. There is a righteous authority. It says when the righteous are in authority, the people rejoice. And I'm going to tell you what, we sat here this morning and I started off pretty bad a little while ago. I felt kind of rotten. But I'll tell you what, there's a handful of us here, with God's people, I'm as happy as I can be. Because I have in my heart my firm desire that it's not about who's here, who's missing, outside of Jesus. He is the righteous authority. And it says the people rejoice, but when the wicked beareth rule, the people mourn. Just look out around you. You see it everywhere. My friends, sin's a problem. God authorized Jesus Christ to fix the problem. Jesus died on that cross to solve the problem. And there's a promised day ahead that all those that God gave him to fix, they're going to return right alongside of our elder brother Jesus. When he says those wonderful words, behold, I and the children which God gave me. Brothers and sisters, I pray the Lord will watch over us. We see darkly now, but there's coming a day, and the Lord will come again and take us home. That's my prayer. God bless you.